living and perfect Dharma is rarely met with, even 100,000 million kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I bow to face the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Good evening.
Good evening.
A big question many people have is about the meaning of life. What is the meaning of our life? We'd like to know. When we know the meaning, then we know how to live day by day according to the meaning. And each of us has to go on this journey and find the meaning through their own effort. Not have it explained by someone else or read about it in some book, but make our own discovery. But the one thing we do know, that is the meaning of our life is not limited by this existence that we have now. This existence that's maybe good for 100 years. Maybe not quite, but more or less. We have 100 years of this existence. So it means that the meaning of our life is not limited by birth and death. If we feel that way, if we think the meaning of our life is limited by the birth and death, and it's kind of like going to a movie. Start and end. Our life is not like a movie where critics can analyze it and then say, well, what was the meaning of that? And then go out for coffee and have some discussions. Or write about it in the newspaper. So we cannot understand the meaning of our life in that way. Just 100 years defined by a birth and a death. The meaning of our life is not simply a story with a beginning and an end. And maybe there's a message there. So what this means is that we have to see our life from the standpoint of the infinite. If we want to know the meaning of our life. But at the same time, the eternal meaning of our life is actually expressed in the things we do every day. And the things we do every day over a period of time, when we look on them, feels like a movie sometimes. We look at our life. Entertaining movie. So when we look at our life or someone else's life, it looks like there's a start and there's a finish and there's some story in it. There's a story to tell. But we don't need to analyze what is the meaning of this life, of this existence. Each life is meaningful. And each difficulty that we come across in our life is meaningful. This is This is where we start. This is where we start our study. So we know that we have absolute life, infinite life, and we have the relative life. We have eternal life, and we have everyday life. Two sides. We are two sides of the same coin. And this is our human nature. So it is important to understand, to recognize this quality or this characteristic of our human nature. We need to understand our two sides. Otherwise, if we don't see ourselves in that way, if we don't see our life in that way, we will wind up attaching to just one side without appreciating the other side. So it's important to avoid any kind of thinking that says, well, my daily life is the more important side, or my spiritual life is the more important side. Best thing we can do is to live both. Live both as fully as we can, and this is what Buddha called the middle way. Middle way. If we don't pay attention and see the meaning in both sides of our life, we will be off balance. So many years ago, when Suzuki Roshi was here, in the 1960s, there was a Shosan ceremony at Tassajara. So one student came up to ask her question, and she said to him in front of everybody, I have many questions, and I can't choose between them. And so I just want to say to you that you are the only faith that is here for me, and I want to thank you. And he said, yeah, but choose something and be concentrated on something. Be concentrated on something you've chosen. Choose some problem. And then she said, but what if it seems insurmountable? He says, well, then choose something easier. So he's saying to her, don't just stick to your spiritual side. Don't just stick to some emotional, sentimental feeling. You have to be involved in your life and in your problem. Find something. So, Buddhism has many schools and many different philosophies. So it becomes very rich in its understanding of how human life unfolds. How it unfolds individually and collectively and eternally. So these various teachings give us insight into our dualistic nature and our dualistic way of seeing things. So when we study the teachings of Buddhism, study the scriptures, we come up with the Four Noble Truths, and we also have the Eightfold Path, and we have the 12 links in the chain of causation, and we have the three bodies of Buddha, we have the five aggregates, we have the six paramitas, and so on. So we can study and appreciate these various teachings as a part of our practice. But the most important part of our practice is how we relate to the world and how we relate to each other in our everyday activities. We humans can be very difficult creatures, as we know. We are always creating conflict. Everywhere on the earth there's some kind of conflict. And major suffering. We humans are constantly creating and extending suffering. But the gift of Buddha's teaching and Buddha's practice is that the suffering can be avoided. Suffering can be avoided. When we study our teachings and when we practice this way, we know how. We know how suffering can be avoided. And we know that it is not possible to agree with everyone. It's not possible to agree with each other on all things. It's just not possible. But it is possible to keep our minds flexible. This is available to everybody, despite the various opinions that we have. We can keep our mind flexible so that we can understand each other's feelings, and we can understand each other's understandings. In other words, we can, with our own life, we can leave space for each other. This is possible, and this is how we can avoid suffering. And this is our practice. Right now we are in the election season. Everybody? It's a little emotional. And on our street, well, several people have signs promoting somebody. You see this in every neighborhood, and some of the neighbors had a sign for somebody, and they were taken. Somebody took their sign. Somebody took their signs. It was an act of anger, an act of frustration. Someone who took them is walking around suffering. Grr, grr, like that. Take that sign off. Grr. So that person has no space in their mind for differences of ideas. So when it comes to this election, we may feel that we are right, and we may feel that the other side is wrong. But if we can let go of the idea of absolute right and absolute wrong, we can understand, we can really understand something that's called right, and we can understand something that is called wrong, and the understanding is important. And if we have the understanding of both sides, then our relationship will not be in conflict, even though we disagree. We have to keep the relationship without conflict, even though we may disagree. And if we try to do this consciously through our will practice, it's very difficult. I'm going to make myself agree with you. That's pretty hard. We can't will it. The only way is to practice Zazen and let our mind be flexible. And it's called a practice of letting go. Letting go of our own stubborn opinion and stubborn idea. If we can practice letting go, then our mind will always have space for the unfamiliar, and will always have space for many, many different views. In this way, our everyday life will be supported by Zazen. So before any of us appeared in this world, what exists? What exists here? Before you appear here, what exists here? It is something that we don't know. We can't explain it. Each of us is something that exists here and now. So, in this room right now, some of you are listening to something, and somebody is saying something. At the same time, we are something that does not show itself in that way, in those particular acts of daily life. We are something beyond that. So before we exist here, something is already here. And each of us, as we chanted earlier, each of us is something that has a form and color. At the same time, we are also something that has no form and color. When we understand our nature that way, it's easy to make space for each other. And then we can understand each other, and there's no conflict. We don't have to steal a sign. We don't have to steal a sign to make us feel important. And this is why we chant the Heart Sutra, to remind ourselves over and over again. When we understand our life in this way, and you meet someone who is saying, grr, 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 just say, "Would you like to have a cup of coffee?" And then listen to their point of view. That's all. And maybe they won't steal a sign again. Everyone, everything in this world wants to know their true nature. And we want to express it, and we want to be it. This is the inmost desire. And as we know, it's not possible to know it intellectually or analytically. We have to be patient and wait till the understanding comes to us. And we make space for its coming by practicing. And so someday, maybe you will be driving, maybe you will be hiking. Maybe you'll be walking, or maybe you'll be sitting down. Maybe you will be spreading peanut butter on some bread. Maybe you'll be in the shower. Or maybe you'll be helping someone. And you will recognize something very important. You will recognize your nature, and you will be able to say to yourself, I can be unselfish. I can be unselfish. It'll come to you. And you will recognize that there's no need to try to be unselfish or to act that way, because it is a rule that somebody wrote, like a precept or a Ten Commandment that's on a piece of paper somewhere. And you will understand that it is not about pride, this selflessness. It is, you will understand, it is what you are. To be unselfish is our true nature. And this quality is not unique to you or me or any one person. Through this practice, you will understand that to be unselfish is everyone's true nature. That is expressed naturally, without some kind of special effort. And it will manifest itself when we continue practicing this ancient way that has been brought to us from a land and a time and a place so far away. So let's continue to practice this way and make it possible for everyone to make important discovery. Does anyone have a question? Yes, Jaya.
So, I had an experience that where I went through that grr kind of reaction. So, and I didn't realize that it was actually that reaction until you just mentioned it. I thought I was just thinking of everybody else. So, on my discussion board, I had one person post, kind of weaved into the topic, it wasn't even related to the topic, but couched it in political terms. And that so-and-so said this, and it was his political view that he was bringing in, and it was completely, of course, not consistent with mine. And so, and I didn't realize, but when I responded to it, I was putting, my point was, don't bring this in, because this is not the forum for where we have to discuss these issues. We have to discuss it in a very nonpartisan kind of a way. We have to look at the economics and the financial and the business perspective, and not at the political perspective. But the reality was that I said that, but I realized actually, and I said out of respect for everybody else, we don't want to take sides on political sides on this, but in the reality was that I think it was actually, I said it more because it was more that it was antithetical to what I believe, my political views. And I didn't catch it. I thought I was doing it because it was the right thing to do and out of respect for everybody else, but actually it was more because I had that, and it was so subtle. and I didn't realize it. It's very hard to catch those moments. I don't know if there's a way to do that, but it was so subtle. So I guess my question is, how do you catch those moments?
Pay attention and practice. Yes, please.
Thank you for sharing the situation where the person pulls out the sign and also gives that expression. You showed it really well. Actually, I have gone through that experience. It is in the context of elections, coincidentally. And when this person showed the disgust and the anger about some sticker, anywhere, stickers or whatever about, and got angry, and it was not about the person I supported or not supported, but the fact that the disgust coming out of the person or the behavior, I didn't know how to explain what is wrong in there. So you explained it fairly well, and I still don't know if somebody does that, how to explain what's not right about doing that. Because when I tried to move away from that situation, it was understood as though I support the other side. So many times what happens is, during elections, when you want to stay neutral and you don't like somebody behaving like that, it is understood that you're on the other side, which is not true. It's just that the behavior is not right. So how would you explain that to the person if you're in a situation? And if you see somebody, like if you saw a person pulling out the sign and making that, how would you explain that person what is wrong about this? You may not be supporting that or whatever it is, but what would be the right way to tell the person? I never understood that.
Don't explain. Just be friendly. When there is conflict, or there is suffering, try to create some friendship. This is the best way. In other words, explaining comes from here, but being friendly comes from here. And this is the best way to resolve it. This is the best way. Thank you. Yes, Umar.
I was just thinking, all these signs that are out there for elections and all that stuff, once the election is done, it would be nice to go to different people's houses and knock on the door and say, hey, if you're done with the signs, can we have them? And, take the signs and make something really useful out of them, baskets or something nice like that people can use, potting baskets. I was thinking about that. This is really interesting.
It would be good. It would be nice. Make a gift.
Yeah.
That would be nice. Okay, let's, maybe we can start a project. Thank you. Yes, please. Colleen.
Thank you very much. I was struck by when you said, you know, someday you may have a moment when you have the thought that you can be unselfish. And I really love that. And it feels like that moment would be, you know, like waking up, you know, like coming alive in a way. But I'm wondering, I mean, to get to that point, I sometimes think that people have to feel like they are enough, or they have enough, or that they're secure. I think it's not easy to say, I can be unselfish if you're feeling not enough, or that you don't have enough security or enough. I don't know. And similarly, to be able to have tea with someone, you know, after they take it in your sign off of your yard, particularly in this election, it would be hard to be that generous of spirit if you feel like if you have felt hurt or betrayed or something, you know, you have to feel like you're enough in order to let that one go. You know, so I'm just wondering, how does practice help one feel that sort of full security, and so that they can be unselfish?
When we recognize that we have enough, what feeling do we have? What kind of feeling do we have? When we sit zazen quietly and the mind settles down, and the distractions don't disturb us, and we feel settled. What is the feeling that we have? Well, maybe it's not fair to ask us. when we feel we have enough, it's accompanied by feeling of equanimity. When there is equanimity, then there is the sense that whatever we have is enough. It's when we say, oh, I need more, then we lose the equanimity. or I want to get back at that person, we lose the equanimity and we don't have enough. But if our mind is like that, in equanimity, we know we have enough and we're ready. We're ready for something, some experience. Equanimity opens the door. It is an open door. So, you know, when we feel that our mind is a little bit uneasy or troubled and we don't feel equanimity, that's when you say, what do I need? What do I think I need? Why don't I feel I have enough at this moment? And when we explore it, we learn something. So So there are no promises, but we are practicing equanimity and opening a door. Yes, Bonnie.
Just have an observation based on what you said. You said it's when I feel I'm enough, not like thinking about it, but just feeling like I'm enough, then I feel like everyone else is enough. It's because if I don't feel like I'm enough, like, oh, I'll be enough after I get this work done, then I see that person as an obstacle to what I'm trying to get done, and then I'm not getting what I need from that person. And but when I feel like I'm good, you know, then I feel like we're all good. I don't know. That's it. And this practice definitely helps me come back to that. So,
thank you.